I'm Ross.
Euphemism! Hey everybody, welcome to the A Dime Back Podcast. I am Tyler Wilkinson, and I am joined today by our staff writers. We have Megan Bard.
Hello.
And we have Russ Steinberg.
Hello.
That's great. And we have our producer, Alex Cohen. Alex, what's up?
Hello, hello.
Alex, what the fuck took so long with the sandwiches? How many sandwiches do you need? Why are there two sandwiches? What is on these sandwiches? What could possibly have happened from the time you went to make the sandwich till the time you returned with the sandwich? It was literally 40 minutes. And I want to know. Walk me through the process, please.
Well, most of the reason I had technical issues, so that was the big part of it. But
with your
carving
knife?
The sandwiches, both with the sandwiches and with getting set up for the podcast.
And carving the meat.
I was raising the turkeys. That's what I was doing.
You were plucking them.
Yes, I had to pluck.
So they're turkey sandwiches.
Yeah, turkey.
Both of them?
Turkey, pepper jack cheese, a little bit of chipotle gourmets on one slice, and horseradish sauce on the other slice. I got a good fire going on in my mouth.
What kind of bread?
Vermont Country White.
Yeah, all right. Well, this podcast is brought to you by not one, but two of Alex's sandwiches. Go to Alex's house.
So
take away, you know, like plan for 4 or 5 hours out of your night. And enjoy some sandwich. This is a great
Tyler,
start.
Tyler, you're recording, right?
Not only am I, no, this is the podcast. This is what it is tonight. We haven't done a podcast in like 6 months. This is what the people want. There has been absolutely no outcry for us to talk about UConn. All they want to know is about sandwiches.
6 months since we've done a podcast. Has there been one person that's asked when we're doing one?
Actually, yes. But anyone who wants to hear this podcast... 100%. Yeah, anyone who wants to hear this podcast is a person who holds awful opinions, has terrible taste, and who should not be taken seriously ever about anything. So despite a few people asking when
Thanks
the next
so
podcast was. Right. Also, yeah. Please turn off your ad blockers. In all seriousness, it has been a really long time since we've done a podcast. It's an entirely new year now. We'll try to get better at it, but we absolutely won't, and we'll do like three this year. So as long as we're all okay with that ahead of time, I think everything will go swimmingly. But we want to start, we're going to save the football talk for the end, and the men's basketball talk is going to be really depressing, so we thought we'd front load it with some good stuff and actually begin the podcast talking about the women, who have went undefeated in the calendar year of 2016, and who's win streak is now up to 88 games. Not too bad.
They're fucking awesome.
Pretty good. This season's been so much fun because, like, last year we had to deal with all of the, like, they're ruining the game. They're so, it's terrible.
Oh, we'll get that again in the tournament, though.
Who was the girl from Maryland who was hitting Shabazz like threes?
Destiny Slocum.
She's fun.
She's a freshman.
Yeah, Maryland has the number one recruiting class. She's one of the best recruits in the country. Despite the fact that Gino gets the best players every year somehow.
Every year.
I think my question, too, about that is, even if he was getting all of the top recruits, what's wrong with that?
Right. Nothing.
Isn't that part of being a great coach that you put together a program where players want to go and play? And not only that, but you coach them above their ability?
It's not like Cal doesn't get better. Cal and Kay don't get better recruits than everybody else.
Yeah, and I mean, Coach K and Cal are kind of universally regarded as 1 and 2 in the men's game. You know,
I would wager
and rightfully so.
I forget what the last year we found women's rankings back to, like 2008, something like that. There's like 10 years worth or something. I would wager that Kentucky has had the number one men's recruiting class in that span more often than any one women's school has had the number
They
one
have, actually.
Class. There's no question.
538 no did question. This piece. 538 actually did this. And if you looked at it, Kentucky has had, on average, better recruiting classes than the UConn women's basketball team.
Yeah, that's not shocking. I think actually, looking at it, I think Duke and Baylor, the women's teams, were, you know, outpaced UConn over that sample size. But I would bet Kentucky blows them out of the water as well.
UConn does get really good recruits. Like, we shouldn't just shit on their high school talent that's coming in. They get really good recruits. But the thing is, they have, let's say they have a top 10 recruiting class every year. Some years it's one, some years it's further down. Every year they have the best seniors in the country because Geno develops them.
That's why Sanaya Chong is the best senior in the country.
Ty, I was very interested in your Katie Lou KML stats that we were looking at today. The fact that Katie Lou Samuelson has been stupid number of three-point shots. We were talking about how many she's been scoring lately and whether she is on par to pass either KML's single season or all-time record. Granted, she's been playing a lot of minutes up until the conference schedule. She'll probably play fewer minutes through the conference schedule, but she's got a lot of threes.
And something that's fun is I believe this season she has 2 4-point plays.
So Kalina Mosqueda Lewis hit 398 threes in her UConn career, which is the all-time record for the NCAA as well. UConn record and NCAA Division I record. Currently, Samuelson is on pace to come up short based on her career average through 37 games she played last year and the first 13 of this year. But this year, she is making a fuck ton of threes. She is making 3.38 threes per game, which is fucking nuts. I mean,
it's nuts.
But so basically what we figured out is she's making 3.38 threes per game right now this season. If she continued that same exact pace over the rest
she's
of her career,
over 45%.
She would be hitting, she would hit almost 500 threes in her career. She would not only beat the NCAA record, she would beat it by like 22%, like absolutely demolish it. If you want to be more realistic and think, especially with as the team gets more depth in her career and she's going to play in more blowouts, probably take fewer shots, she needs to average 2.61 threes per game, which is fucking reasonable, to get to 399 and pass KML by 1.3. And that's assuming she plays basically 40 games per year on average. It could happen.
She can do it. Totally.
Average
to
go to the championship game.
Which they will.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, they will. I like how you said they'll play in more blowouts.
They will, because next year they're going to be even better because they're bringing in all these great athletes.
Right, and they, for once they actually do have the number one recruiting class, or they will whenever those rankings come out, coming in next year, and no one's going to fucking schedule them again. The fun part about this year was that everyone thought they were going to get B-class UConn, and then they got their shit kicked out by UConn rolling in.
She's played in 37 career games and like 35 blowouts.
Yeah.
Already. So...
And if you look at what's coming back next year, like you're losing Sanaya Chong. That's who you're losing. And you got another year of Gabby and Kia, two more years of Lou and Nafisa, and then all these great – and Crystal, of course, is coming up too. Like, they're going to be really, really good for a really long time. If they don't lose this, like, I don't know. I don't know when somebody's going to catch him.
Gabby good.
Be very good.
Gabby good.
She good. She woke.
Right the hell off the ground.
She is
my favorite player that I've watched at UConn in a very long time. I'm going to say right now, and I know that this is like whatever they call it being recent, but she has a chance over her career to become like my definite all-time favorite UConn player.
I'm just such a huge fan of her game because she does so many different things. She's currently leading the team in assists, in steals, and in rebounds.
They're not dribbling down the court one pass and shoot. Some offenses run. I mean, they have rotations. They have a plan, and usually the first pass is to Gabby, and then she kind of picks out the best option from there. So,
yeah, and you definitely see. I mean, part of the reason I think Samuelson and Nurse are shooting so well is just how well the ball moves in and out, and it has a lot to do with Nafisa Collier being one of probably the 10 best players in the country at the moment.
Yeah.
The way she can catch the ball while moving to the basket and making a shot kind of all at the same time, like that's probably the most fun thing about it is the ball moves so well, it moves so quickly, but like everybody else is also moving at the same time and doing everything all at once. And so like when it's working, it looks so awesome. And even when they are running down the court, it's like pass, perfect shot, whatever. Like the execution is so flawless. It's really fun to watch.
Look at KLS and Kia Nurse's 3-point percentage?
KLS's 3-point percentage is just over 45%, and Kia's is just under 45%.
And as a team?
Team, they are 42% from three and just over 50% from the floor.
So this is the down year women's team. They're shooting 42% from three. Just for reference, no men's team ever has ever shot 42% from three. No men's, UConn men's team.
Fundamentals.
The top was 1996, Ray Allen's last year on campus when they were at 40.76.
What's this 42%. Year's men's team?
So the men's team this year is shooting 30.9%, which, whoa, as you would likely imagine, is the worst ever for a UConn team. And I believe, I would have to run the numbers again, but as of before the last game, and I imagine it's true now, they are actually attempting more threes per game than any team in UConn history. So to put that back together, more threes than any team in UConn history and missing, or I should say at least making fewer than any team in UConn history. It's not what you want. You hate to see it.
Like many of us, and I hate to fly in the face of narrative in all caps.
So you do it. It's hashtag but, the narrative in all caps.
The
narrative. Please respect the brand of the narrative.
I was very angry after the first two games. I thought we looked woefully unprepared for the season, and there were a lot of problems, and I was very upset. And then the injuries happened, and I was like, okay, this is a lost season. There's no way we're going to put together a tournament team with two of our starting five out for the season. And I was like, okay, just give me the win at the Garden. I just want to beat Syracuse, and then I'll be fine. Whatever happens the rest of the season is fine. And then they win at the Garden, and it was a great and fun experience, even though the basketball was terrible. So that happens, and I'm like, okay, I don't care what happens the rest of the season. I'm good. But I do have to say, I can't not be extraordinarily bummed out right now. Even with the state that we're in right now, we still should be winning some of these games that we're losing. And it's very frustrating, and it's starting to mount. I wonder if this could possibly spiral into a situation where a coaching change is needed.
They are
at that situation already.
Was that Russ?
I asked if we were at that situation already where a coaching change is needed.
Well, here's the thing, and I will say no, but if they think it's needed, they actually kind of need to do it now. And the reason I say this, right, if we go through 3 years from now and say UConn finishes in fifth in the AAC each of those years, and the football team is somewhere around like 5 to 6 wins, and we've been now in the AAC for what, 7 years? And then at that point, it's obvious that Kevin Ollie cannot lead a championship caliber basketball team. You're not going to get someone to replace him that is of the cachet you can get right now. So I'm optimistic enough that I don't think that's the case. I think Kevin Ollie can run a championship level basketball team, and I think he can get there in the next couple years. But if the administration does not think that, then they need to do it now.
I mean, I also don't, I don't think that we should be thinking about changing our head coach. We're so used to having Calhoun, who is one of the, you know, top handful of guys ever in the history of the game. And it's like, I know we all want to be at that level. I just don't expect that from Kevin Ollie right now. But I think there are enough things that he does really, really well, particularly defensive coaching and recruiting. If he had somebody sitting next to him that could do some of the other things that he needs assistance with, though I've even seen improvement in some of the stuff that we complain about, like big man development, like Stephen Enoch is much better than he was last year. Even Facey's improved a lot.
Facey's so,
like,
a lot better.
A lot better.
Maybe it's the Dwayne Killings effect.
I think people are projecting Brima's lack of development on everybody else, probably. I mean, and his lack of development is concerning and obvious. That being said, I've been very pleasantly surprised with Kenton Facey this year.
And it was sort of a, I mean, who, maybe Kenton Facey could have done this last year, but they brought in Sean Miller for 1 year and he didn't get to show it. You know, there's a lot of, it's been a, Kevin Holley's had a really weird run his first 5 years. It's been weird. I will say this though, too. There are teams out there that consistently make Sweet 16s or at least compete for Sweet 16s who have made Elite Eights and Final Fours with worse coaches than Kevin Holley because their programs have either bigger structural advantages with recruiting. You know, there are other factors at play. And I think Kevin Holley can overcome his own deficiencies either through just getting better or, you know, with help from assistants. And I don't know enough about the inner workings of his coaching staff to point at one guy and say, he's not doing this, he's not doing that. I will say I did find it encouraging. And again, we don't even know the full story about how seriously Kevin Freeman wanted that assistant coach's job, but we all basically thought he was a shoo-in to get it. And instead they went outside and pulled a guy who they thought could come in and presumably fix some of the problems that they were having. I hope they continue that sort of self-evaluation and maximize the impact that the assistants can have on Kevin.
So I don't disagree with anything that was just said, but this is kind of how I see it. Ollie's first year at UConn.
Yeah.
From that point until 2012, he was an excellent assistant coach. 5 years since then, he still has the qualities of an excellent assistant coach. He's a great recruiter. He has his specialties. We have seen some improvements in other areas, like you said, but things that concern me, like the first two games this season, when it looked like UConn was not ready at all, the consistent slow starts, which again points to a lack of preparation, and seems like Ollie's not being able to explain a lot of things that are happening with his team, or maybe he doesn't want to the media. Things like that are what concerns me. And again, I'm not ready to fire him now, but there are red flags there, and I think it's something that we're going to have to look at soon. And it's hard to do it with this year because of all the injuries and the narrative.
Thank you.
And it's hard to say, would this team have improved? How would this team have improved if they hadn't gotten hurt? I don't know. It's something that UConn's going to have to look at if a couple of years aren't what we hope for them to be. And, another thing, in the 4 years that UConn's been in the American, UConn, assuming that this year UConn won't finish second, UConn has finished below their preseason expectation every single year.
Right.
This is a subject where we must drink.
I have to have my podcast.
Because believe me, I don't think any of us, I mean, even still, and like 6 months ago, none of us would have even wanted to broach this subject. And even still.
And it's not fair to have that discussion now.
Still, like, we're all just like begrudgingly having the conversation because it's something that's just being talked about incessantly by fans. And
right.
Here's in other sports. So if Kevin Holley leaves tomorrow and UConn hires Tom Moore and then they finish fourth and fifth in the AAC and maybe they win the AAC tournament once every 3 years and maybe they win a tournament game once every 4 years with Tom Moore as the coach, UConn is not nationally relevant at all, period. The entire history of UConn basketball as we know it ceases to exist in the public eye for within what? 8-10 years max. We'll look back at the 2011-2014 championship teams as like a distant memory that will never be repeated, and that's how people nationally will start thinking about UConn. Kevin Holley, for as long as he stays there, is going to be wearing a championship ring. He is going to have his clips from the 90s aired during the games with him hugging Jim Calhoun. Kevin Holley being on the program is a reminder in and of itself of what UConn is capable of.
It's a sad, sad state of affairs.
It is sad.
I still like Rodney Purvis as a person.
Yeah, I like all of them as people.
They're all nice young men.
And you know what? They don't know a shit.
That's also true.
They're doing their best.
You want them to play better? Write a fucking check.
A big fat one.
Absolutely.
Dance Jackson can't get a check, but Randy Utzel's kid gets a job.
that a segue?
I don't know. Maybe.
All right. What are we going to say about football then?
UConn hired Randy Edsall.
No. What?
Yeah, really? I know.
Oh, shit. I read about that on blog.com.
I was actually. Wait. Hold on. Can you say the name of his website without looking it up?
No. I knew, because it's not even the jersey guy, right? It's a different thing now.
No.
I did know the jersey. I should get fucking points for the jersey guy. That's pretty good. It's not blodsblog.com. Blodsblog.biz.
So.
It's not. It's, Blogsthoughts.blogspot.
It's Russ Steinberg presents blogsblog.russsteinberg.net.
I was talking with a guy at the gym today about Edsall, and like some meathead just walks by and he's like, if he wins, it's not gonna fucking matter. And I was like, yep, that's about right.
What's well, not gonna matter?
Because we were talking about how neither of us liked the hiring.
Oh.
And
well, yeah. If he wins, it's
a some sure. meathead just walks. Some meathead just walks by and he goes, and he just looks right at us. It's like, beady eyed. If he wins, it's not going to fuck it. I just thought that was funny.
I mean, it's.
Does he want to join the podcast?
Yeah. I think he's going to, he would be a man of few words if that was, if he was going to do that.
I mean, look, I hope he does win. I'm not too proud to say, I hope I'm wrong about this. And I hope it turns out that, you know, this whole thing works and it doesn't just, you know, turn into death by a thousand paper cuts. And I don't know that it's a sure thing that we're going to get UConn Edsall that everybody remembers. And, you know, he was just barely over 500 here. It's not like we're talking about, you know, I mean, yes, there were like, what was it? Four seasons where they had 8 games 3 times and then 9 once. Which mm-hmm. is cool, and if that happens, awesome, awesome.
For me, the only difference between this and Pasqualoni is that the big donors are excited about it. Like,
it does have the same flavor like, of like.
It's like the.
This is a safe bet, except maybe
and
not.
And like, there were a lot of arguments to be. There were credible arguments to be made at the time that Pasqualoni was a safe bet.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Nah.
And it seems ridiculous in hindsight, obviously, because those years were awful, but
not as awful as the Diaco years.
And I'll say this about the Diaco hire, as much as in retrospect, it turned out that like he was not cut out for this job. I don't think idea to have hired the hotshot coordinator.
He's going
to
get a job soon anyway.
I mean, on paper, it was a great hire. It just turned out he was a lunatic and like you know, happens. Not great that they missed that one, but yeah, you know, coaches can be crazy and also really good at their job, so I can see how there might have been some confusion there.
I think they're They're drastically overestimating how much people are going to care about Randy Edsall, I think.
I think they're also dramatically underestimating how pissed some people still are at him. Like, I don't think they realize like there's still a whole bunch of people who are really mad at him still.
I will say that I completely forgot that I wanted him to get crabs. Completely forgot.
Yeah, Facebook's On This Day feature is a really good way to find out when you were mad online. Alex and I were both very mad online on this day in like 2011 or whatever. I just think UConn's fan base when Edsall was here was artificially high. I don't think they actually had 38,000 fans. They probably had 24,000 fans. And the rest were coming because it was a novelty, because they were playing cool teams they remembered from, you know, watching football on Saturdays or, you know, even just basketball names. They wanted to see the rivalries translated onto the football field. They wanted to see the new stadium. And there was only 6 opportunities per year to do it. And we watched, even in Edsall's years, the attendance was waning by the time his teams were really good. They were down into the 38s. And then Pasqualoni, you know, drove it off the cliff and they dropped down, you know, into the low 30s. And then Diaco, you know, set the bus on fire or however this analogy wants to end. And now they're in the mid 20s. they're not getting back up to mid-30s next year. And I would be shocked if a Randy Etzel team ever gets them back up into the mid-30s. To which my response is, then what's the fucking point? Is the football team even
What's the point to hiring him? Or what's the point to giving a shit about football?
I think the point the point was definitely to win. I think the point was definitely to win and not to. I don't think they're so deluded to think that Randy Etzel means 35,000 fans per game next season.
I think they're deluded into thinking that Randy Etzel winning gets them 35,000 fans. I don't think he can. Not in the way Randy Etzel can win. That's my point.
He hasn't really learned how to run a modern offense yet. Like, you got to bring somebody in that actually plays football that's fun to watch, which is why I was hoping we would get some FCS coach first. Because at least it would be fun to watch.
Your count offensive coordinator should be the Citadel basketball coach.
Strong agree.
That's a great idea.
But like Orlando Ball. But
Orlando Ball.
You raise a good point, though, because, I mean, look at last season, not this past season, but the one before. Going into the Houston game at the close of the season, the team was on a good run and had a shot at making a bowl game if they won it that last home game. And how many fans showed up to that game? Wasn't it like 23,000?
I think it was 28.
It was 28,000. And you're playing a real team with real stakes. Undefeated real team with real stakes. And we still can't turn out fans for that. And that tells me that it's not just about winning. It's also about, like the guy, like you guys say, it's you got to put the entertaining product on the field. And I think there were some Edsel years where it was entertaining. Much as we like to think that he was just this run pass defense-minded guy, there were some years, particularly with Orlovsky, where the team was actually fun to watch.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not Etzel that's going to put people back in the stands. It's a star quarterback. But can Etzel get you a star quarterback? Right. I don't know.
Is there anybody who can?
I don't know. And I don't – what star quarterback wants to come play at UConn?
And if that's going to be the case, if there's nothing UConn can do in the near future to fill its football stadium, then why are we trying to have an FBS football program and get into a Power 5 conference? Because that's not going to happen if you can't fill in your stadium.
The most optimistic read. I'm with you. The most optimistic read I have of this Etzel hiring is to stem the bleeding, to get 3 years to bring the program back up to essentially where it was, call it 1 year into the Pasqualini era, right? Somewhere like right where I don't think anyone's expecting him to be like Fiesta Bowl level good ever in Etzel's tenure, but somewhere back in the respectable bowl eligible. Sure.
Yeah.
So that's the most optimistic read is that they just want to get back to that point 3 years from now and then figure it out. And so get back to the point where Etzel was there the first time and then reevaluate and say, okay, now how do we succeed since we blew it last time we were here? The more pessimistic read I have of it is David Benedict reading the landscape of college sports, looking where UConn is, looking at how the Diaco tenure turned out and saying, all right, I bet in 3 years Randy Etzel can get this program back to 6-7 wins. I'll get credit for that turnaround, and then I can probably go to an athletic department that's not a sinking ship. Maybe Auburn's open by then. Maybe where else was he before? Arizona State.
Rutgers.
You know, places with money that are going to want someone who's quote-unquote turned around UConn football, even if UConn football won't turn around enough to get UConn back up to the level of these other universities. That's my fear. That's my ultimate pessimistic view of this hire.
And the thing that bums me out a lot is that pessimistic fear sounds really plausible.
I mean, fortunately, Benedict has actually, unlike Bob Diaco, staffed his department with quality replacements. So I think
that's the thing.
I think Beth Goetz would be
Benedict leaves today. Yeah, Goetz could be the athletic director.
Totally fine with Beth Goetz.
Yeah,
but that's not a good reason to be making coaching hiring decisions. Like even the whole strategy of saying, okay, we need to get back to respectability and then figure out how we hit our home run. Like we all know they need to hit a home run. I say just fucking swing. Bob Diaco was the right kind of coach, but the wrong man.
But the wrong guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Like if they said, all right, fuck it, we're gonna go get an offensive coordinator and we're gonna run the most exciting brand of offense in this conference, and you know, if we lose some games, we lose some games. We're gonna take our fucking shot right now. I would respect that more than I respect this hire.
That's 100%. I 100% agree with you. That's exactly how I feel about it. I would rather swing for the fences, fail spectacularly, go down in a blaze of glory than this middling bullshit where it's like each time it just doesn't go quite right. It's another like wound. I can't take it anymore. It's death by 1,000 paper cuts. I can't do it. It's killing me.
Any other football stuff?
Ugh. The sad panda is just the whole thing. Just sad. Everything's sad except women's basketball.
Hopefully.
I miss you, Big East.
Hopefully they at least hire some coordinators we can get excited about.
If we could do a segment of Russ reads his tweets for a minute.
Oh, yeah. This is good.
I did ask this question on Twitter. If Red Panda opened up for Springsteen, what amount of money would sports writers pay to see it?
A very, very small amount. Because they do not have any money.
Oh, no, that's true. That's true. Theoretically, if they had money.
Oh, yeah. They'd be there with their custom Bruce meets Red Panda iPhone cases. Filming it for all the world.
You are a sub.
This is sub-podcasting? Sub-podcasting?
Yeah.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening to the Dime Bat Podcast. We'll do this again in 2018 when our next episode will air. Until then, every Friday, you can read the Dime Bat mailbag on dimebat.com and, I don't know, other shit. We'll do stuff. It'll be cool.
I want to play video games with my friends. I'm Russ.